Recording in a secret location deep in the heart of the Smeelosphere, in a world where everyone rocks a stash like Harold. You're listening to C4 on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, the podcast that wishes it had abs like Chris Higgins.
All right. Welcome back to another edition of the podcast, the C4CHB podcast. This is episode 17. I am your co-host, Matt Lee, at MattLee980, joined by my usual co-host.
Hello, everyone. It is Clay Emo. I'm at Canuck Clay on Twitter. And we are blessed today with someone who's not Chris Golden.
He's much better looking than Chris Golden, I'd like to say.
You guys are...
Why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Harrison Mooney, co-founder, co-editor of Pass It to Bulis. You can follow me on Twitter at Harrison Mooney. And I am blessed to be hanging out with you two fine-looking gents.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I like him better than Chris already.
I think he's definitely increased our average looks.
Yeah, tenfold. I'd say so. For those of you who don't know, Chris Golden is off in Hawaii right now. He was newly Maui'd, as he's been saying so often throughout the week.
Has he actually been saying that?
Oh, he said just Maui'd. It was his actual pun. Ba-dum-bum-sh.
What do you think? What's
your reaction? Terrible.
Well, you know, he's a newly married man, so now he's starting the newly married bad jokes.
Well, he does join a fine cast of married CHBers. That would be JJ.
And yourself.
Victoria. I'm Victoria.
Oh, that's right, Victoria.
And myself, yeah. Instant reaction, Matt?
I am instantly glad I'm still single. Well, thank you, Harrison, for joining us on this podcast. For those who don't know, Harrison Clay and friend of the show, Marie Hui, will be teaming up to perform another video of some sort that I'm sure is going to take YouTube by storm. Is that correct, guys?
Well, Harrison, it's your video, your idea. I don't know how much you want to share
Can you share a little bit? Like, what kind of song are you using?
All right, well, I mean, I can share, yeah, you know.
Don't give away the farm, but...
Our video might be out before this podcast. Oh, who knows? One of them is going to come out right before the other. So.
That's true. No, it's, you know, we're going to be doing Adele's Someone Like You. This is the source material. And I think that... if this comes out before the video comes out, you can probably guess about how we're going to go with that. It's an idea that a couple people floated to me on Twitter, and I think it's going to work out. This is provided that I can sing like Adele, and obviously I can. So,
my word of advice before you get going with this is keep Clay in the background as much as possible and keep Marie in front of the camera as much as possible. And you can be in that middle ground and you'll get viewers no matter what.
That does seem to be the secret to your success,
yeah,
right?
You know, I'm a smart guy. No one is tuning in to watch the old guy playing the
When
camera.
I see I you
there
in your music videos.
Someone.
Okay, we're one person.
When I see you in your music videos with Marie, I'm sort of like walking out the half part of the screen where you're in it. And I just have Marie, and I'm like, oh, this is a great video. Yeah. And then you start singing, and I'm like, let's turn the volume down just a smidge.
You would be with 99% of the population, I think, Matt.
I'm sure this is going to be a great video nonetheless, though.
You kind of watch it like a horror movie, right? It's like your hands in front of your face, and you're just like, okay, the monster's going to come out over there, so I'm going to strategically put my fingers in that area.
That's it. I'm wearing a mask for this video today.
Harrison knows exactly how to sell this video. It's going to be a hit for sure.
Yeah, can't wait. It's going to be fun.
Are they booing me?
No, they're saying boo earns, boo earns.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs.
It's an easy save for me, but if you're wandering out and aggressive like he does, I mean, that's going to happen, so...
That's horrible. No, you know what that is? That's horror awful. That's horrible and awful mixed together. Horror awful.
I couldn't help it. She knew my one weakness. That I'm weak.
Sadin is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
I'm sorry, Wilson. I'm sorry.
All I did was tell the truth.
Of course you did. But there's the truth and the truth.
There's a storm coming. At least that's what the Canucks' new entrance video for every game says. The Canucks and their fans were privileged enough to make the playoffs for 5 straight years and 6 of the last 8, but if this season has been any indication, Vancouver is long overdue for a rebuild, or at least a retool. Understandably, the combination of a grueling schedule compressed by the Olympics, the introduction of a new head coach, and the endless amount of injuries have played factors. But here's a hard dose of reality for even you diehard fans. This team has gone stale and is in major need of a rejuvenation. Now comes the hard part for this franchise that's at a fork in the road. Selling hope. Can this team do that with the likes of Bo Horvat, Nicholas Jensen, and Hunter Shinkaruk in the pipeline? None of them come with the pedigree that a lottery pick has. There isn't a quick fix answer in a free agent pool where players like Thomas Vanek and Paul Stastny are likely out of their price range. The Sedins will be 34 by the time next season rolls around, and who knows if Ryan Kesler will be there for the ride. The same can be said for Mike Gillis, who's been the architect for this mess, and John Tortorella, who's a square peg of a coach trying to fit into a round hole for a team headed for a rebuild. And we haven't even discussed the goaltending gong show. Roberto Luongo and Corey Schneider played a grand total of 546 games for the Vancouver Canucks, only to be swapped in trades where the goaltenders were the best piece of the deal. For Eddie Lack and Jacob Markstrom, who have 76 NHL games in their collective careers. Is the goalie graveyard bound for a resurrection? Ask yourselves, are you really willing to buy what the Canucks are selling? There's a storm coming. Yeah, I would say so.
All right, we're going to get into this rewind portion of our podcast. And basically, we look at what's been going on with the Canucks in the last few days. And you guys, we just saw another loss, this time to the Tampa Bay Lightning, 4-3, on a night where they honored John Tortorella and the 2004 Stanley Cup winning team. Sort of.
You know what I don't get about that is that he's been in the Eastern Conference for so many years, and as opposed to doing a five-year thing, they made it 10 years. It seemed like there was more than enough opportunities for John Tortorella to be honored as the head coach of a winning Stanley Cup team.
Yeah, I actually kind of felt like they were trolling us a little bit here in Vancouver. You know, it's like, here's Tampa Bay. They've been a franchise since 1992, and they pick... Because they could have done it at any time this year,
exactly.
Right? It's not like so they pick the Canucks, a team that's been around for like 40 plus years and won nothing. And they're like, all right, guys, if you could just sit here a second while we celebrate this Stanley Cup we won. In fact, if maybe your coach could actually just come across to our side and remember that time he coached a good team, that'd be cool. And then he can go back and we'll play a game.
You know what was really cool, and that I'm really jealous of, is that every fan at the game got a replica Stanley Cup championship ring. That's pretty cool.
Wow. I don't think we'll ever see that here.
I mean, I don't know if they were like the kind of rings that you get in cereal boxes, but that's pretty cool.
Crazy. So, and the game itself.
The game.
Well, yes, the game. Three things real quick. Alex Burrows had 2 goals. Ryan Stanton had 2 goals into his own net.
Oh.
And, of course... Eddie Lack led in a weak one. Is he getting tired? So let's talk about those 3 things real quick.
For my money, Eddie Lack might be getting a little tired. I think it's, 11 straight starts for him since the Olympic, going back before the Olympic break, maybe. Either way, they've decided that they would run Eddie Lack into the ground as long as they're in contention for a playoff spot. But obviously, right now, it seems like this game especially was the nail in the coffin. So maybe we'll see Jacob Markstrom towards the end of the year, but... You're right, maybe Eddie Lack is wearing down a little bit, and he hasn't exactly played a lot of games lately.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree on that. I think that with Eddie Lack, I mean, there's not that much left for the Canucks to be playing for at this point. So I think I'm pretty comfortable with them really just kind of running with Eddie Lack right now, letting him experience this number one job, get kind of overwhelmed with it. You know, he's going to have this entire offseason to look back on this run he had, kind of, you know, regain his bearings. And when next season begins and he's the starter, I think that probably everybody will be pretty happy that he had this trial by fire.
Quickly, guys, do you think they're going to go after another goalie in the summer to give Lack and Markstrom some competition?
I think these last 11 games that they have left is really going to serve purpose as to whether or not it'll be Eddie Lack or Jacob Markstrom or someone else via free agency. I think right now, from what we've seen from Eddie Lack, we've shown that maybe he's not quite ready to be a number one goaltender, so... How he performs from now until the end of the season is going to be pretty crucial into where he will be next season with the Vancouver Canucks.
Harrison, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll probably go after a veteran guy. You know, they're not going to go after a veteran starter. I think that they'd look really foolish if they did that, first of all, you know, because Lack is going to want the minutes and the starter's going to want the minutes. And what you don't want after all of this is another actual goaltending controversy, right? You have a veteran guy who's going to come in and kind of help to, you know, settle Lack's nerves and do some mop-up duty and just kind of be a really good, strong veteran presence.
Awesome. Alex Burrows, let's talk about him. I don't want to talk about Ryan Stanton. Those are two unfortunate bounces, and we're positive people here mostly on the podcast. Well, at least I am.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah,
good. Okay, so let's talk about Alex Burrows. He's hot. 3 points tonight against Tampa Bay, 3 points yesterday against Florida, nothing against Washington, and then 2-1 respectively Winnipeg and the Islanders. He has 9 points in the last 5 games. Where's this been all year, Matt?
Well, I just first want to bring up, I didn't find this out until a short time ago, but Alex Burrows has not had a 3-point game since game 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Were you aware of that?
No, I had no clue.
3-point game. Like, do you remember a time when Alex Burrows used to rattle off 3-point games like they were nothing?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Back-to-back hat tricks, yeah. He had at one point, it seemed like. But this is the first time since game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final that he's had 3 points. And he's got 2 of them back-to-back now. So let's let that sink in for a second and realize that, yeah, he was long overdue for an outburst like this one.
What's the difference, Harrison?
I mean, I think he got one, right? I mean, it was, at this point, the thing with Burrows is, you know, he'd gotten his conditioning back up, and I think he'd kind of gotten past some of the injury troubles, but he was just really clutching the stick, you know, and he needed a lucky one, just a moment. He finally gets, you know, a puck that kind of squirts to him where it's just a tap in, he buries it, and all of a sudden, the weight of the world is off his shoulders. Like, it was like he just escaped from Shawshank. Like, he was just standing there in the rain, and so I think that's what we're seeing now is, you know, Alex Burrows free. And he's playing with a kind of, you know, just like freedom and looseness that he hasn't had all year.
So Alex Burrows.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Matt.
No. I was going to say, I mean, he'll never use it as an excuse, but having that chin guard after he suffered the broken jaw was a huge distraction for him, and playing with it can be a big distraction, especially when Burrows scores the kind of goals he is. They're usually rebounds or tap-ins. It's hard for yourself to see with the chin guard in the way.
So get ready for this, you guys. If Alex Burrows is Tim Robbins in Shawshank Redemption, then his Morgan... No, is it Morgan Freeman?
Yeah, that's Morgan Freeman.
Must be Nicholas Jensen. Because Nicholas Jensen, playing on his line, has got 3 points in the last 3 games. 1 apiece in the last 3. Is this what we've been waiting for? A prospect that gives us hope?
I don't want to get my hopes up. I'll let Harrison go first, though.
My hopes are so up, it's unbelievable. They're the like most up. They're as up as they can be. No, I don't know. I mean, it's true. Like, you know, we've seen a lot of prospects come through here and have 3 or 4 good games, you know, and look like the next one and then go quiet after that. You know, I think that Jason King comes to mind, right?
Thank you. I was just thinking that.
Right? So I think it's too early to say he's the guy. But at the same time, Jensen's looked really good in a top-line role. And it hasn't just been a matter of him cashing in on chances. He's really been the catalyst for a lot of these things. And I think more than the production is just the fact that he's leading that line. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably what bodes the best for the Canucks right now.
What impresses me most about Nicholas Jensen's performance these last few games, it's not that he's been benefiting from line mates. He's been the catalyst on a line with Henrik Sedin and Alex Burrows. He's creating his own chances. I mean, the goal he scored, I believe, was it against Washington? Or maybe it was Florida. The Florida game, where he just sniped it from inside the slot. I mean, those are goal scorers' goals. And I think for the Vancouver Canucks, you can sell hope on that a little bit. But I'd like to see a longer period of games where we're seeing more of that consistency from Nicholas Jensen. I mean, we've seen stuff like that from Zach Kassian before, and he just goes quiet for the next dozen to 2 dozen games.
All right, 2 more points in the rewind. One of them is the Canucks have scored 3 goals or more in the past 5 games now. A couple of those were losses, but they've done it, and they haven't done it all season. And they're doing this without Kessler, and they're doing it without Daniel Sedin.
And Mike Santorelli.
Yes, and Brad Richardson. Not the,
yeah.
So, if they're healthy, do they score more, and more importantly, do the team's fortunes change?
I mean, it's all ifs and buts, but you'd have to think that without Daniel and without Kessler being injured, maybe Jensen doesn't even get this chance, so who knows what could have been. But, I mean, if you put them all on the table, maybe you are looking at a situation where the Canucks maybe have 2 or 3 points more in their playoff position, and maybe their chances look a little bit better. That said, I'm a little more optimistic about what this team can look like, if healthy, starting next season.
It's a long time to wait, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say my only concern with getting a little bit excited about this run that we're seeing from the Canucks right now is, I mean, well, first of all, they're still losing, but they're also playing some pretty crummy teams. You know, this is a run where, like, when we looked at this chunk of the schedule back in the day, we thought, okay, this is where they're going to really cement a playoff position. Now they're already out of it. But you look at the teams that they're playing, and they're teams they should be scoring goals on. You know, teams like Winnipeg and Florida, I mean, even Tampa, they have good goaltending, but they're not a very strong defensive team. So, yeah, I'd say if the Canucks start doing this against, say, the California teams that they're going to be playing next month, that's something. But for the time being, it's nice to see, but we need to contest a little bit.
And to your point, Harrison, you've seen the Canucks play games against teams like Ottawa and Dallas and Calgary. Those are teams that are around that same stratosphere of teams that they've been playing lately, and they've struggled to score goals in that instance as well. So for all we know, this could just be some hot streak that the whole team as a whole is on, and we could quickly see them fade as soon as the Canucks get back to playing some more playoff-worthy teams, such as Colorado, which is in the distance, and like you said, Anaheim next Saturday.
And it just speaks to the fact that they wasted that opportunity against Phoenix and Dallas, the two teams that they had to beat 2 weeks ago. All right, we can't do a podcast without talking about Lagan Luongo. So the last point of the rewind, we saw a 4-3 win Vancouver over Florida in their game against Luongo just 2 weeks after the trade deadline. Good story, bad story? Do you feel bad for Lou, or is it time to move on?
It's time to cut the cord for me. I mean, this has been a story that just dragged on for far too long. And for me personally, I'm happy that Roberto Luongo is happy in Florida. That said, I'm glad that this storyline is over because it was like beating a dead horse over and over and over.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was nice to kind of... Actually, first of all, whoever made the NHL schedule had to know, right? I mean...
Something was in the offing.
That's weird.
Very weird.
You know, the fact that Luongo plays Corey Schneider and Eddie Lack in back-to-back games is absurd. But I thought that as kind of an ending to what's been a very strange, long saga... it was nice to see Lack and Luongo go up against each other. I think, personally, as much as, you know, I'm a Canucks fan, I wouldn't have minded if Luongo had won that shutout. You know, and then he skated to center ice and shouted, "Are you not entertained?" and threw some gear at John Tortorella.
Had some entrance music, right?
Yeah, true, right? Yeah. Yeah, he just, like, you know, throws his hands down and fireworks go off and the lights go out. And then when they come back on, he's in the rafters and... He swings away on a rope. I don't know.
No, and speaking of which, I know you guys were both at the Heritage Classic in nicer seats than I was, but didn't you look at that long ramp and just picture like a WrestleMania moment where someone just comes down?
I expected some like Stone Cold Steve Austin's music to be playing in the background, but no.
Yeah, and they're just taking forever. Like you're like just walking a straight line. Like you're going back to high five people. Be more efficient with your time.
I expected some sort of pyro, like flames coming up on the side and giant fireworks. No, we got none of that.
What we did see was Luongo's last game as a Vancouver Canuck.
And now, a flashback to the week that was for the Vancouver Canucks.
In front, they score! Nicklas Jensen! Canucks with two here in the third. Game tied at three as Jensen put that one home for his first in the NHL. So 1-1 with a minute and a half to go here in the first. And the Panthers having trouble getting the puck into their zone. Here's Burrows looking in front. Jensen scores! Two goals in two games. The first two of his career. And the Canucks take a 2-1 lead. Jensen deeps, and he hit the post as well. Did it go in? The light's on, yes. It's in.
Had it go in off his back. It hit the post, hit Roberto's backside, and went in. And Nicklas Jensen.
All right, so this is normally the segment where we're doing half full, half empty, but instead we're going to do fixing the Canucks. So let's assume for a moment that the Canucks don't defy the 97.6% chance that they miss the playoffs. Now would be an ideal time to analyze this roster, look at who will be back and who will not be back next season. Let's start right now at the very top. What does the future hold in your guys' mind for general manager Mike Gillis and head coach John Tortorella?
I have a gut feeling that if the Canucks do okay in the last month of the season, that both guys will be here when the season starts. I just have a sneaky feeling. It's not necessarily my preference. I don't see them giving up on Tortorella. I just don't. That's a big investment. And I certainly don't see them getting rid of both of them. That's a lot of money. My preference is that they get rid of Gillis. I just think Tortorella needs a bit more time. But, you know, maybe I'm just a loyalist. But I don't see them moving. I don't see them moving, actually.
Yeah, I'm going to go the other way. I think that... I think John Tortorella is done. I really do. I think the Canucks would have let him go already. You know, if it wasn't for the fact that at this point it doesn't really make any sense. You know, they may as well keep until the end of the year, do a proper coach search, take their time. You know, as opposed to letting him go and then having what, some interim guy take over the team and the Canucks looking even more dysfunctional for the last month or so. I think, you know, when you steer the Canucks into their worst defensive season, what, maybe ever. I mean, they're not going to score 200 goals this year. And that'll be the first time they haven't done that since 1998. We're talking like pre-lockout, and not just like right before the lockout, like 1998. So, you know, I just don't think that you can, you know, shepherd that kind of thing. And also have that incident with Calgary, you know, blow up the Luongo Lack thing. Just all the things that Tortorella has done this year, I think, point to a coach that's going to be one and done.
Okay, I admit it. I'm kind of biased because, speaking of music videos, we did that song back in June, and it's kind of embarrassing if we did that song.
It only lasted 1 year.
Yeah, but anyways, I'll stop relating all my answers back to music videos, even though Harrison's here, yeah.
Well, Clay, since you took the opinion that you think Mike Gillis might be back next season, do you trust him to guide the Canucks through a possible retool of the team, given the moves he's made over the last couple years?
The goalie thing leads me not to trust him. Like, frankly, 9 months ago, we had two of probably the best goalie tandem in the league, and now we don't have either of them, and we have an unproven number one. No, I don't trust him, but I just have this gut feeling that he's going to come out and say, you know, Henrik was injured for a bit, Daniel was injured for a bit, Kessler was injured for a bit, our defense was injured for a bit. Let's see what happens when they're all healthy. They always say that, and it, of course it never happens. It's just unrealistic. But I don't know, you know, his relationship with Aquilini is good, bad. Harrison, you might know a bit more. I just have this weird feeling that they're both going to be back. It's not my preference, but I don't know. No, but to answer your question, I don't trust him. But, you know, they're not going to
come back. But you still think he is likelier to come back than not?
I think Tortorella might come back, and Gillis, I'm not sure.
Okay. Harrison, on that point about ownership, is there reason to believe at all that ownership plays a bigger role in all these decisions than we are led to believe?
Well, yeah, I mean, they definitely do. You know, I don't think there are a lot of teams in the NHL where the owner is sitting in on, say, trade deadline day or sitting in on interviews with coaches. Francesco Aquilini is a really hands-on owner, and I do think that that's a reason that Mike Gillis will probably be back, is their working relationship seems pretty good. You know, people like to talk about how Aquilini is kind of like strong-arming him, and don't really think that's the case. I think they actually just have a really strong working relationship. So I think if either of these two guys survives, it'll be Gillis because of that.
Harrison, you touched on this a little bit earlier with regards to John Tortorella. At what point in this season do you think things started to go south for him? Was there a point where he felt he lost the room?
Well, I think the point where he lost the room was when he got it confused with the Flames dressing room. You know, and then went like old boy in that hallway. Yeah, I know. You know, he's like fighting his way through the hallway with a wrench. And it was just, you know, it was like that Take On Me video by Aha. Like, just pipe wrenches for everybody. No, I think that was definitely the moment. You know, the Canucks had 2 weeks there where he wasn't around. Mike Sullivan looked really out of sorts. The team looked out of sorts. You know, and Tortorella comes back and admits that, you know, the team looked like a team without a coach. You can't do that. Like, I honestly don't know how the Canucks can bring him back after all that stuff and this moment that we all agree negatively affected the team for 2 weeks in an NHL season.
Was the decision to start Eddie Lack over Roberto Luongo at the Heritage Classic a move that you think was made more so by John Tortorella or by Mike Gillis? Do you think that played a factor at all into when things started to go south for Vancouver? I'll let one of you guys answer.
John Tortorella, despite his deficiency, he is a stand-up guy, right? He was the one who sat there and said, this is my decision. I thought that Eddie Lack gave us the better chance to win. So I truly believe that it was Tortorella's decision. And yes, that therefore it led to some of this mistrust and this unrest, mm-hmm. and Luongo's unhappiness. But yeah, I definitely think it was his decision to start Lac, and we know what's happened since then.
And you obviously hold it against him, though, for that decision.
Well, I as a Luongo guy and a Luongo fan, as much as I just said, I kind of do like Tortorella, and I hope he gets another chance, even though it might not happen. Yeah, no, I think it's all on Tortorella for that decision.
Any thoughts on this one, Harrison?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Canucks and Tortorella, they all seem to say, you know, this was Tortorella's decision. But, I mean, it was so suspicious. Mm-hmm. It's weird for a guy to come back from the Olympics with his second gold medal and then the team to be like, actually, the rookie who played behind you and who's been okay this year, he's going to start all these games. And he's going to start the Heritage Classic. And then, magically, a few days later, Luongo was traded. And I know there's this whole idea that the Heritage Classic is what kind of made the trade happen. I don't buy it.
Yeah.
So either Tortorella is a crazy person who tanked the Canucks goaltending situation, or the Canucks had something in the works and were just a little bit hesitant about playing Luongo and risking an injury that would undo a trade they've been working on for years.
You can understand giving Lac the first one. Mm-hmm. Luongo's coming back after a long trip. You can understand maybe the second one because Lac played so good.
But the Heritage Classic was that final straw where you're just like, what the what?
Yeah.
Let's continue digging through the wreckage here. The trade deadline came and went. Ryan Kessler stayed. Will he go in the offseason? Where do you think he will be playing hockey in October?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think that, you know, he asked for a trade at the beginning of the season. We don't really know the particulars of what that is. You know, if it's just him unhappy with the direction of the team or thinking maybe that the team is starting to fade away, that he wants to go to a winner, that's something I think you can change. I honestly think that if you get Ryan Kessler a big ticket winger in free agency, there is a chance that he might come back. But if it's a personal thing, you know, if there's someone he has an issue with that's going to be here come next fall, you know, and Kessler's not going to want to play with that guy anymore or whatever it is, then yeah, that move happens. So it's tough to know.
I just can't see him staying. I agree with you from a standpoint of, they saw what happened with Luongo, they saw the end result, and they've been skewered in the media over what the return or lack of return there was. So I just don't know if they can afford to do that with Kessler. And if you know, if they're striking while the iron is hot, it was probably hotter for the trade deadline before he got injured, but if he's still a valuable asset, if they're encouraged by Jensen and Horvat and whatever it may be, maybe they will look at moving him. I don't see him starting the year here.
To your point earlier, Harrison, on, you know, if someone stays and goes, hypothetically, if a guy like John Tortorella is dismissed after the season and they bring in a new coach, is there a scenario where you could see Ryan Kessler coming back to the Canucks saying, hey, I changed my mind, I like this new coach, whoever it might be, I'm willing to stick this out?
Yeah, I mean, I do think so. I think, again, I don't know the particulars, I don't know what necessitated the trade request, but if it's something like that, you know, coaching, or if it's just a general unhappiness with direction, then they should be able to change his mind. I'll say, you know, as much as the Luongo thing turned into a circus, my big issue with the Canucks right now is they can't have players dictating where they go, asking for trades, and making management look weak year after year after year. Honestly, I think that if Kessler tries to control this trade and force a move to one particular team, he can shut up and they can just keep him. I honestly think that they need to strong-arm him if he starts strong-arming them.
Any last
it's interesting because I guess management has agreed with these players to give them all these no-trade clauses, no-movement mm-hmm. clauses, and now it's basically, in one way, to your point, Harrison, it's kind of hooping them a little bit.
Mm-hmm. That's all on the laundry list for whoever will be GM for the Vancouver Canucks in the offseason. Let's continue sifting through what has to be done at that time. You look at the Canucks' current upcoming free agent list, and it's a long list ahead. Some of the notables, we'll start from the top. Zach Cassian will be a restricted free agent next year. He's making $870,000 on his entry-level contract. What has Zach Cassian shown he's worth in terms of monetary value?
Oh, okay.
Cody Hodgson. I don't know. You know, it's funny because I think that Cassian still has, you know, he has a lot of potential and he could be really good. But this is a chance for the Canucks to get him on a really cheap bridge contract. That's, you know, my thinking is they could probably get Cassian for under $2 million, sign him for 2 or 3 years.
Tanev money, like 1.5 million.
Yeah, something like that. you know, sign him for 2 or 3 years and just say, hey, show me what you got. You know, you're supposed to be this big prospect. Make us look foolish. Do to us what PK Subban's doing to Montreal right now. You know, and make us look like idiots for not signing you to a better deal sooner for longer.
He's now had about 2 years equivalent with the Vancouver Canucks to get his feet wet with this organization. I mean, you've seen sometimes he can be a great player for the Vancouver Canucks, and other times you're left thinking, this is the guy we got for Cody Hodgson, Clay. So, with that said, do you still believe in Zach Kassian to be eventually a game breaker that we all hope he can be?
You know, it's funny. I don't think it matters what I believe or what anyone believes. Mm-hmm. And Harrison kind of hinted at this. The fact that he was the prize or the exchange for Cody Hodgson, Mike Gillis, if he's in charge, he's going to make sure that he gets a chance, that Zach Kassian gets a chance. It just can't. They can't afford to let this one blow up or let this one go. No matter how good or bad Cody does, actually, I think he's always going to be tied to him, though. And yeah, therefore, I think he will get a chance. And I agree completely with Harrison. Sign him for 2-3 years. Sign him for under $2 million. Kind of give him like a TANF type contract and make him prove himself. When he does great, then awesome. And then we sign him after that. But he hasn't done much. And I know a lot of people think that he hasn't got a fair deal. I think he's got plenty of chances this year, actually. He's just kind of messing them up left, right, and center.
Here's another guy who's sort of had a fork in the road in his career. Jordan Schrader, he's on the last year of his restricted free agent, or of his entry-level deal. He's making only $600,000 this season. Have we gotten to the point where we're ready to give up on Jordan Schrader at all, or would you like to see him brought back on a one-year deal?
For me, for him, I don't think they need him. Mm-hmm. He hasn't shown me anything. Like, he can skate a little bit, but we have a bunch of guys that can skate a little bit. And he hasn't shown much of a nose to the net. I don't know. I was the one who drafted him in my fantasy pool about 3 or 4 years ago. I know. Give me that face. I have Nick Jensen, though, so that's a little bit of hope. But no, I don't see him back, and I don't think we need him back.
I don't think Jordan Schrader as a center is a player the Canucks need anymore. He's still got a lot of skill and a lot of hockey sense that he hasn't really been able to tap into. But, I mean, if I'm the Canucks, I re-sign him. For a reasonable deal, and I tell him, when you come back next fall, you're a winger. He's played the wing a little bit. You know, I know he likes the open ice. Everybody does. All these prospects do. We all love the open ice. But I think that Schrader needs to figure out how to do what he does from the wall, or there isn't a place for him on the Canucks.
So, but if he does come back, is there a spot in the top six for him? And then is he a top nine guy, or he's not a fourth line guy. He's got to play third line or higher.
He does strike you as the kind of player who only excels given a top six situation. So if you assume that Burrows is in the top six on the wing, and let's assume that Chris Higgins bounces around the second and third lines on the wing, there's only a limited amount of spaces there for Jordan Schrader to seize and play in a scoring position. So, I mean, and again, from what we've seen from Nicholas Jensen, he's probably earned a shot at least getting a look in a top six position. So there's another guy who's in competition with Jordan Schrader for a top six spot. So for me, I mean, this is all on Jordan Schrader. He has to take advantage of the opportunities he has, and so far, we haven't seen it. Let's move on with the forwards. Another guy who's right now injured with the shoulder injury, Mike Santarelli. He was brought in on a a two-way deal, I believe?
Yeah.
A two-way, one-year deal, almost at league minimum, for $550,000. Really, if you think about it, Mike Santarelli's injury is where things really started to go south for the Canucks, because it seemed like after they lost some of that center depth in Mike Santarelli, they started to lose a couple more games. They stopped scoring goals. Has Mike Santarelli shown that he's worth at least another year or two?
You know what's crazy? Up until his injury, you know, he was obviously proving his worth. And I just heard a couple of interviews with him on the radio and on TV. It was on the radio where it didn't seem like contract talks were going well. Maybe just the language he used or the vibe I got. So the fact that he's injured now makes it even worse for him. And I would not be surprised if he's not back next year.
Dun, dun, dun. Harrison, what do you think here?
Yeah, you know, I think that he could do anything at this point. He played well enough that he might be able to parlay it into a decent deal with someone else, because the Canucks are going to try to lowball him. Yeah. I mean, there's no question about that. And they're going to want to try to hold on to as much cap space as they possibly can so they can chase some of the big fish in free agency. But I think they can get something done with Santarelli here that is a pretty conservative deal for maybe a couple of years, you know, because he's going to have a space in this lineup. He can move around. He can play just about anywhere. You know, and he's going to be in the NHL. And I think if he gets out there, and this is my guess as to what will happen, is, you know, they'll let him look. And if he gets out there and he discovers that a lot of teams aren't really sold on what he did in, you know, a small chunk of the season, then he'll turn around and he'll take what the Canucks are offering.
I do have a confession to make.
Sure.
The reason why I think we should can Schrader and, you probably know where I'm going with this, and can Santorelli is so they can retain David Booth.
Oh, and we'll get to that in a second.
Buy out Alex Edler instead.
Oh my goodness, Clay. Okay, okay, this is madness.
This is Sparta. Yeah. That's how madness this is.
This is senile is what it is. Let's... on you got me all flabbergasted now. On Mike Santorelli, do you believe that he was made productive because of the players he played with or because he was genuinely creating his own scoring opportunities?
I mean, he was working his butt off and he was creating. You know, he benefited a little bit, obviously, by playing with the skilled guys and not the guys that, you know, in our bottom six. But I think he was oftentimes the hardest working guy on the ice, always moving his feet, getting the dirty areas, much like Higgins. Mm-hmm. No, I think he made the best of his effort.
I only suggest that because if you look at the scenario that he's in right now, this smells a little bit like Anson Carter did when he spent 1 year with the Sedins. He had a very productive year, and then he tried to, you know, negotiate as such with whoever it was that was GM at the time, Burke, Nonis, whoever it was, and he ended up leaving for Columbus, and we never heard from him again in the NHL. Does this smell at all like an Anson Carter situation?
Well, I mean, Carter had a full season, though. Mm-hmm. That's the big difference. You know, and he had that gaudy 33 goals. You know, you can take that. You can take that to any general manager in the league and be like, hey, do you want a 30-goal scorer? Because I'm one of those. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's what separates him from other teams. And obviously, you know, at that point, Columbus is not a very good hockey team. Mm-hmm. Was Doug McLean still in charge of that team? I don't remember.
Can't wait to hear this.
Yeah, probably not. But they're going to throw money at a 30-goal scorer because on paper, that's something. But, you know, Santorelli doesn't have those kinds of numbers.
And he's not a 30-goal scorer.
He's not a 30-goal scorer. And that's why I think he'll find the market for him isn't really that strong.
Does anyone here think that Darren Archibald and Zach Dalpy are worth talking about? Is either of them going to be back?
Archibald will.
Yeah?
For sure. Yeah. I don't know about Zach Dalpy.
I agree.
Okay. Let's move on to the defense here. We'll get to David Booth, I promise you, Clay.
Should I go get my jersey now?
No. You can keep it in the closet where the Luongo jersey is now. Chris Tanev will be an RFA. He's probably the most notable of the defense. He signed the bridge deal for $1.5 million. Has he earned a bump in salary?
Yes, I don't think we can afford to pay him what we're paying basically every other defenseman, $4.5 million and up.
So what's a fair price for Chris Tanev?
Two and a half?
I think he's also looking at arbitration rights, if I'm not mistaken, this summer.
Hmm. Yeah, I think probably Tanev comes in around three. I know, but the thing is, you know, you have to look at what he is, right? This is a guy who has shown that, and where I think Tanev's negotiation will be interesting is he looks really good with underlying numbers. You know, he isn't a guy who puts up a lot of big stats, but oftentimes now agents are looking at some of these underliers like Corsi, like Fenwick, and taking them to teams and being like, okay, these are defensemen. They don't score a lot, but look what this guy does for you when he's on the ice. And Tanev is one of those guys. You know, he makes Alex Edler better. And if the Canucks are going to keep Alex Edler, you kind of want to, you know, you're going to want Tanev around. But I do think that there are enough comparables in the early $3 millions where Tanev's going to wind up getting at least that.
I have a haunting suspicion that Chris Tanev and his agent are going to start their bidding at about $3.5 million with whoever will be GM at the time. Because, like Harrison said, he does have those underlying numbers. And for whatever reason, you don't notice him too much out there because he generally makes a safe play. And I think that's very underrated when it comes to defensemen. So we'll see where Chris Tanev's numbers lie. But again, I have this suspicion that it could be at a $3 million price tag.
I bet you they start at four. There's no way that
I'm not a bargainer by any means.
No way he gets four, but my guess is the first thing we hear when that negotiation really starts is Tanev's camp is asking $4 million.
Four, a nice round number.
Yeah.
I want you to be my agent if I was ever in the NHL.
I was happy with 2.5.
Yeah. Yannick Weber, he must not be happy with the situation he's in. Oftentimes he's either a healthy scratch or he's playing fourth line minutes. Will he be back at all?
Well, if you're signing Chris Tanev to anywhere between 2 and 3 million and all the other guys are making between 4.5 and 5, you're going to have to find a couple of D on the cheap. So I don't know if Weber will be the one who wants to do that, but the Canucks are going to have to find someone. This year it's Stanton and Alberts and Weber all making 700 or less. There's going to have to be one or two guys in that scenario next year as well. I didn't really answer anything.
No, you really didn't, but that's okay.
I'll make a bold prediction here. I think Weber's in the Swedish Elite League next year.
That is a very bold prediction, I'd say.
Write all these down. These are good.
These are good. We'll put it on the board for next time. Yes. Let's whittle down to prospects right now for the Vancouver Canucks. There's a couple that should be in contention for some spots, like we mentioned with Nicholas Jensen earlier. Do you guys expect, first of all, Bo Horvat to step into the lineup next year in some sort of role?
Is he okay? Is he still injured? What happened to him?
No, Horvat's playing well. I think he's healthy. Shinkarik's the hurt one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, Clay.
How dare you, Clay? I thought you were cool. No, I think Horvat makes the team next year. Mm-hmm. They'll find room for him, and it might be a situation where he just kind of plays fourth line, but... And then we'll have that same thing we have every time that a prospect comes in and the Canucks try to bring him along slowly, where everyone's like, why isn't he on our first line? You're wasting him. But Horvat will start fourth line and work his way up to, you know, into the lineup. And my guess is by the end of the year next year, he's playing third line, either center or maybe even on the wing in kind of an interchangeable scenario.
Hunter Shinkarik, another player who's on the radar, but because of the fact he suffered a major injury that required surgery this past season, likely looking at either another year of development in the WHL or elsewhere. Frank Corrado is another interesting guy, and especially if you look at the situation the Canucks have at blue line in the offseason with regards to Chris Tanev being a restricted free agent and Yannick Weber, Andrew Alberts all possibly being moved out. Do you see a situation where Frank Corrado is starting as a third pairing defenseman next year?
I do. I think he played well enough, you know, a year and a half ago. And I think, you know, when we talk about having to find some defensemen on the cheap, he fits in perfectly. He's a prospect that is from our organization, and he's played well, and he's shown that he can play some minutes. Not necessarily massive minutes, but he can play some minutes. Yeah, I expect him on the team on opening night next year.
Of Bo Horvat and Frank Corrado, which do you see having the best chance to make and stick on the Vancouver Canucks next season?
Both.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a youthful team you're looking at. Do you agree?
I'll say Horvat. I think Corrado has the better road, the easier road. You know, he'll be able to make that team. And he won't have to fight as many guys for it, and not just because, you know, there aren't as many defensemen. But... you know, when he had his call-up here earlier in the year, he didn't look good. And I think that, you know, what happens with Corrado is going to be entirely up to him. He's got some time here. The Comets are actually still in a little bit of a playoff chase, if you can believe it, you know, where he's going to have to show that he can really be a top-four guy before the Canucks even consider him for, you know, a bottom-six role on next year's team. They'll get someone on waivers before they let, you know, an unready Frank Corrado play in their lineup.
Let's speed this up just a little bit here. There are other players this year who are under contract for next season that have had horribly underwhelming seasons. Where do you see players like Alex Burrows, Jordan Schrader, Alex Edler playing next year? Will they all be back on the team? Will they all be... Is there even a trade market for any of them?
Burrows, yes. I think we've seen in the last week
or so. I guess that seems a little silly now that he's had a hot streak.
But. Edler's aggravating. I know Booth's aggravating to you, Matt. Edler's aggravating to me. I don't know if they're going to buy him out. I was kind of being funny there, but that actually wasn't even funny. Maybe just wishful thinking. You hear about rumors about Edler already, you know, them having a deal in place at the deadline, but then they were seeing what happened with Kessler and blah, blah, blah. I see Edler still on the team, and as we talked about, I don't see Schrader on the team, but I see Edler being back.
Your thoughts, Harrison?
I think they'll try to trade Edler, but, you know, Edler still has that no trade, and he likes it here.
Yeah.
That's the big thing. You know, and I mean, Gillis has said that he won't ask a guy to waive his no trade.
Do you think that's
true? I don't think that's true.
No, the thing is, like, I'm sure that there's some kind of, like, weird lawyer speak going on there, you know, where maybe he won't ask a guy, but he will haunt a person's house.
No, what he'll do,
like,
he'll
try to, like Scooby-Doo it.
Yeah.
You know, like,
he'll go up to Alex Edler and goes, hey, I'm not going to ask you to waive your no trade. Wink, wink.
Right.
So just tell me if you need to waive it. Wink, right. Wink. So that's what I think happens behind closed doors.
Those are strong winks.
Those are strong winks.
Aggressive
but
winks.
Those are aggressive lawyer / agent winks that I'm sure Mike Gillis will be exercising. The Canadiens, is there still confidence that they can get back to at least 70, 75-point players?
Oh.
It's been a horrible year for both of them.
What is that, 40, 45 points?
I don't know. Right? Pretty bad numbers.
I don't know. Well, if not,
if they can't get back to those numbers, we're at a situation where you're likely not making the playoffs again next season.
I'm gonna I'm going to give him one more year. It's such a offensive thing to say. I think the Canucks are going to give him one more year to prove that they are.
Well, what are they going to do if they don't do it, though? Well, they're going to find a trade market for them, and there are 5 years left that they have on their deals?
They'll just be really expensive second liners, I guess.
They're saddled with them, whether you like it or not, and there will be no buyouts that they can use on them.
That's true.
Do you believe in the Sedins at all, Harrison?
Yeah, I think that the Sedins can bounce back. I mean, this year has been, in a lot of ways, it's just seemed cursed. You know, I think that you look at what happened with Alex Burrows, and all of a sudden the tear that he's on now after figuring stuff out. I mean, this is the first time that Henrik Sedin has missed any time during a season with an injury. Daniel's been hurt. You know, the new system has them throwing the puck into the opposite corner when they're not crash and bang players. They're players who carry the puck in and then set up. There's a lot of stuff that has really negatively impacted the way that the Sedins play. And I think that a lot of that stuff can be sorted out for next year. So, I mean, I don't know if they're point-per-game players, but I could see them as 70-point players for sure.
I'm going to ask Harrison this question first. So, just restrain yourself here, Clay.
I'll be very polite.
David Booth.
I defer to Clay.
No, you will not defer to Clay, Harrison.
And I've seen Harrison talk about Booth even on TV, so okay. I know he's got an opinion on him.
David Booth will make $4.25 million in the final year of his deal before he becomes an unrestricted free agent in 2015-16. Is it even worth buying him out if he has just 1 year left?
Yes. Here's the deal with David Booth. If Booth handcuffs the team cap-wise, then you get rid of him when you can. It depends really on what happens when, at the end of the season here, the Canucks assess their organizational needs, they decide what they want to do, and they decide how much cap space they have and how much they need. Because they have about $11 million to work with right now, and that's more than enough to do a lot. But they have some RFAs to go after. Then after that, they're going to look at UFAs and who they want to add. That's going to mean figuring out what they're doing with Ryan Kesler, if they're going to try to do something with Edler. There's a whole lot here. And when it comes down to making all of these moves, and you know that a buyout of Booth, who has disappointed, and this really was the year where he could have shown or, you know, made or break, made or broken, you know, you buy him out, and all of a sudden you have another $4 million to work with. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion the Canucks buy out Booth, because if he's not hurting anything, he's a fine third liner that's just overpaid.
Yeah.
But if they need that money, he's gone.
Amen. Testify.
So, it's, in your opinion, there's a whole bunch of situations that the Canucks have to figure out first when they assess their roster before they make a decision on Booth. But let's say that the buyout period for players comes before free agency or something. Is that
it's just before it. And I mean, they'll have it figured out by then. But you know, they've got. I mean, they're going to miss the playoffs, so they've got a much
blasphemy.
Larger,
by
I'm
the way,
sorry, they've got a much larger window here. Where they can make organizational decisions and figure out what their plan is. Obviously, they're going to have to figure out if Gillis is back, if Tortorella's back.
Yep.
There's so many moving parts. And when it comes down to it, Booth is really going to be, I think, one of the last decisions they make before they kind of head into their summer plan.
In all seriousness, I completely agree with Harrison about the priority. I don't think he's going to be the priority when it comes to decision-making. Mm-hmm. And I just think, yeah, like you said, there's a lot of moving parts that have to happen and fall into place before that. I think it's on the radar, obviously. Everyone else talks about it. Mm-hmm. But there's priorities first. It's what are you going to do with Kessler, with Edler, with these RFAs, and signing a goalie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I will say this, that the departure of Roberto Luongo and getting his money off the books for next year might have opened up a situation where they are able to keep David Booth because of the free money that's been saved up now. Goaltending. You got Eddie Lack, you got Jacob Markstrom. Two guys who are making about $2 million combined. Does this team, and we've talked about this a little bit before, does this team sign a free agent goaltender to help the situation at all?
Yeah, I think we did talk about that earlier. I think they go for a veteran guy. They're not going to break the bank on it. But
Tim Thomas is available.
I bet he'd love to come here. That would be amazing. And I hope that he still, because he's got that weird pad set up right now where he's wearing like some Florida stuff and some Dallas stuff. And he kind of looks like he just bought all of his gear at a garage
sale. Looks like my beer league goaltender.
Yeah, right? He really does. And I'm hoping that if he does come, and he won't, but in this hypothetical scenario where I'm very amused, if he does come, he just has like one Vancouver pad. You know, and he kind of looks like a Franken goalie. Like he's just all this weird gear. It's from all these different teams. That's my hope. But yeah, they're not going to break the bank on a backup goalie. It'll be a cheap veteran.
Sure. Let's take a look at some of the goalies who could be available aside from Tim Thomas. You got Ryan Miller, probably would come way too high at a price. You've got more feasible possibilities, Jonas Hiller, Jaroslav Halak, Brian Elliott. Of those three, who could you see actually coming to Vancouver?
You know, Halak's the name that I'm starting to hear a little bit about recently. He's in Anaheim. He's back, you know, obviously.
Is he in Anaheim?
Yeah, I think he, didn't he get traded just
I thought he's in Washington.
I think he's in Washington now.
Washington playing, yes, he's in Washington.
That's
sorry.
Right.
I was reading the wrong thing, yes. But I could see him filling that veteran role and not too expensive. Yeah, Miller is way too expensive.
The other thing on Jaroslav Halak, which is probably why you've heard it, is his goaltending coach in Montreal was Rolly Melanson, who's currently the goaltending coach for the Vancouver Canucks right now. So if the Canucks play that bargaining chip, maybe they can get Jaroslav Halak to come here.
Yeah, no, that's definitely something that I think they're going to be looking at. You know, I mean, when they acquired Jacob Markstrom, that was something that they did consider, was the way that they felt he'd be able to work with Rolly Melanson. So Halak is probably the guy they're going to be after the most, but it depends on how much he costs.
So you say they won't break the bank on them. What would you offer if you were whoever was GM of the Vancouver Canucks in the offseason?
For Halak?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even know. That's a difficult one. I mean, you know, this is a guy who, he got supplanted by a lot of goalies in St. Louis.
And in Montreal, I guess.
Yeah, the Montreal situation was different because they had to choose one of those guys to keep, and they chose the younger guy with Carey Price. But in St. Louis, I mean, that Blues system is a pretty easy system in which to 10 goal,
yeah.
Right? I mean, I think Ryan Miller had a shutout tonight with like 17 shots against something. Like, it's not difficult.
Yeah.
So it depends. I think that Halak's value on the open market is going to suffer as a result, but I do think that he still commands enough that the Canucks might be scared away.
We'll wrap this segment up very quickly by saying there are some other pertinent news. Marcus Nazem resigned from his position with Modo in Sweden. And there are other rumors that the Canucks are courting Trevor Linden a little bit about rejoining the organization. Could you see a scenario where either of these two are possibly joining the organization in some sort of special assistant role or something like that?
No.
No? Just throwing it out
there. It sounds good. It's a very feel-good story, and I think the Canucks are looking for feel-good stories right now, but I don't know. You know, obviously not in those backroom dealings, but I don't see either of those happening.
Yeah.
You?
Linden, no. I don't think that he's even really all that interested in a front office role with the Canucks.
Sounds like,
yeah, he's happy running his gyms, selling glasses.
Club 16.
Yeah. But Marcus Naslund, it's going to depend. I think the Canucks are going to reach out to him if they haven't already. Obviously, he's not doing anything else right now. He's got some GM experience. He seems to really enjoy the front office role and kind of a figurehead role. But it's going to depend on what he wants to do with his family. Because that's the reason that he went to Sweden in the first place, was he wanted to raise his kids over there in their schools. You know, and if he and his family decide that this is the place to be, it wouldn't shock me at all to see him in the Canucks front office next year, maybe even as the GM with Mike Gillis moving back to president of hockey operations.
If Marcus Naslund is the GM of the Vancouver Canucks next year, I will eat some horrible thing.
Happily eat or sadly eat?
I will sadly eat it.
It's like sad eat.
But I will begrudgingly eat whatever it is.
Well, if he's the GM next year, it'll be a bit of a figurehead move. All those decisions will be made by a secret board of shadowy
figures.
It'll
make the Garth Snow hiring in Long Island look like a walk in the park.
No, the difference with the Garth Snow hiring is that he didn't have a kind of a panel of hockey minds around him. He had crazy old Charles Wang just writing checks and telling him to run the team. You know, he retired from the backup goaltending position into the GM's office. That's insanity. But in the case of Naslund, he'll show up here and he'll have Mike Gillis and
that's
Lawrence
true.
Gilman and Stan Smeal and Lorne Henning and whomever, all these people kind of helping to advise him as he grows into that role. If that happens.
Well, Chris isn't here, so we will take over his favorite segment. And this is Ask CHB, where we throw out a question to all of you readers and listeners on Facebook and Twitter, and we kind of get responses. And today's question was quite simple. Matt, props to you. You came up with the wording. And it was simply, what was the turning point of the Canucks season this year? It could be positive. It could be negative. But you'll see from the answers what sort of answers, of course, we got. And Matt, there's some serious ones here and some sarcastic ones, but actually none of them said what I thought would come up would be John Tortorella's.
Really? Yeah. Well, that is very shocking.
So here are some. Steve May says Cody's goal in Boston, a reference to the whole Boston game, you know, 2 years ago. Greg Lynch says owners realizing this thing can really cash flow despite falling revenues if we jettison talent and overpaid beer slingers. There's a lot there.
Yeah.
I don't think I even read that properly. Angry Canadian says calendar changing from 2013 to 2014, but only the hockey gods know why this stuffed up the season so badly. JC O'Donnell says Henrik's wrist injury. Jeff Oliphant says the loss to the Islanders, probably before then, but that sealed the fickle finger of fate. Nice alliteration there.
Yep.
And Jake says, I'd have to say Henrik injury hurt us, and now I have to say Luongo being traded for next to nothing put the nail in the coffin. So a couple people said Henrik.
Yep.
A couple people said Luongo and other things. What do you say?
You know what? For me, this team's fortunes really turned around when they got to that Christmas break. Do you remember that? Because they had played a lot of games up until that point. And, you know, I remember Tortorella saying in that last game before Christmas, he said, this is a tired team and we're looking forward to just getting some rest. And they got the rest, but I feel like they just never turned the light switch back on after that. They were never the same team by the time January rolled around, for my money. And I think that's very disappointing because that coincides a little bit with the Mike Santarelli injury as well. But for me, this team never regrouped after that. And I think they just never found their groove after. I mean, it's interesting how sometimes long layoffs actually hurt teams as opposed to, you know, helping rejuvenate them a little bit. I remember in the San Jose series, after they finished them off in 5 games and went to the cup final, they had about a week off before Boston, and they looked a little bit more lethargic than anything. So, for me, that's what really changed them.
Yeah, and I'm with you, Matt. I'm going to extend that by a couple of weeks. You remember they lost to Philly on New Year's Eve, and then they lost Tampa, LA, Anaheim, Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
One win against St. Louis, and then back to those pummeling losses in California. And then, of course, we know what happened that following weekend hosting Calgary. Yeah, it was a rough 3 weeks for sure.
Garth, that was a haiku.
And yes, I'm back. I missed the last podcast, but rightfully back.
We did do a haiku corner without you. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did listen. I listened to the whole podcast.
We made our impressions of you and everything.
Thank you. You definitely have the best impression.
Yeah, I know.
It might be that.
That goes without saying.
Okay, here we go. So this is the best of 17 syllable creations in the way of 575. And Matt, as always, I would love some instant reaction. All right, here we go. Father Darrell, a priest friend of mine, his haiku: Canucks losing lots, gave up 7 goals in third. Love being Flames fan. What do you think of that? Good one from the father.
I thought it was really funny, especially with the part about love being a Flames fan, because that was, yeah.
They're one of the only teams that are worse than us.
So father doesn't cheer for the Flames, or he does?
No,
he's just saying that the Canucks, it's like being Flames fans now. Is that what he's saying?
Yes, I think he's trying to empathize.
Oh, yeah. See, that's when you know there are dark times ahead.
Yeah, he's a good man. Jerry Maple says, no back-to-back wins. Best effort comes in the third. Why not for whole game? Matt, why not for
whole
game?
Well, if you look at it the last couple of games, it seems like the Canucks only light the fire when they're in the third period and trailing by 2 or 3 goals. So that's pretty interesting because it came against Washington and, again, yesterday against the Tampa Bay Lightning. So this isn't the same Canucks team.
Absolutely. Regular contributor Shoe Thief at Stuck on the Sofa: broke all the players, promised savior he is not. Torts packing his bags. We talked about that. You think Torts is back?
I he will not be back in my mind. Right. That's what I think. And I think Shoe Thief was bang on.
Fair enough. And friend of the blog, often he's been a guest once, and master of the haiku, Jay Bowman Vancouver. Jay Bowman-Coover, says, no more Luongo. Instead, 3 Swedish goalies making polite saves. Quite clever.
You know what I want to bring up? Jay Bowman-Coover just started following me yesterday for the very first time. I've been following that guy for months, and he just started following me yesterday. So I didn't even listen to the haiku, Jordan. So I'm telling you, why weren't you following me earlier?
That felt like a wrestling promo.
That was. I couldn't believe it. I was like, Jordan has not followed me once, and I've high-fived that guy in the media box all the time.
Matt, good things come to those who wait. And lastly, I got one, and I like this. It got some love on Twitter. Here we go. Burrows can score now. Too bad he didn't start this like 3 months ago.
That really just sums up the season. in one word. Like, you don't want to use one player to extrapolate a team's fortunes, but had Burrow's been, you know, consistent from start to finish, they're probably in the playoff spot right now.
There's 46 points right there.
Yeah. So we've come to the time now where we're wrapping up the podcast, and
Thank you, Harrison.
I was just going to say... It doesn't matter. We're going to keep this cut now. I was going to say I sounded like Chris Golden there for a little bit, but thanks for interrupting me and bringing me off the ledge. Yes, thank you, Harrison, for stopping by. You're welcome, Matt. You can come back on the podcast anytime to replace Chris or Clay. In fact, we could do a two-man show,
Let's re-record this without Clay.
You could be M2, Matt and Mooney.
Oh, I like that. Let's go.
I'm going to high-five you because I like you, but that's a terrible title.
Yeah, probably worse than C4.
I don't even know why we have four C's. Anyway.
Clay, thank you for inviting us into your home because we're in the House of Emo instead of the House of Golden.
Yes, and if you heard any like doors opening, garages opening, kids running around, that's because
the house is haunted.
Yeah, that or my kids. One of the two things.
There are no children in this house. We closed every door before we started recording.
Not to be able to sleep tonight.
Doors have been opening and closing. I saw a woman dressed in like a 1920s flapper gown.
Oh gosh!
Just pass through the hall. It's been crazy in here. This is a terrifying house.
I think that was just Clay getting ready for Halloween.
Easy there.
Very quickly, Chris Golden, if you're listening, congratulations on getting married.
Yep.
Married.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast. We will see you next time. And with that, we're out.
And that's it for another episode of C4 from CHB. On behalf of CanucksHockeyBlog.com, I am Chris Golden signing off. Please leave us great feedback wherever you go, iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook.
Notice.
Oh my god.
Good luck keeping up with us. Amateurs.